It's Tuesday, the 1st of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, China flexes its muscle as it marks 70 years of communist rule, but amid ongoing protests in Hong Kong, is its public image at risk of slipping? Plus, the vanishing world of dining cars on long-haul trains. Austria's Sebastian Kurz looks to the right, and possibly the left, for coalition partners. And we'll examine the state of art fairs as London unveils Frieze Week. I'm Ben Brylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. A march is getting underway in Hong Kong today that will cast a very different light on China's 70th anniversary celebrations, as Beijing sets about putting on a proud display of choreographed nationalism. Demonstrators in Hong Kong will be doing their best to disrupt some of the ensuing global media coverage. Jonathan Fenby was editor of the South China Morning Post. Jonathan, what do you think China is expecting from the global media coverage of this anniversary?
Well, I think above all, China and its leader Xi Jinping want to make a big impression about how far China has come in the 70 years under the rule of the Communist Party and its power today. So this is really a demonstration, I think, of national might, if you like, which will be personified by the military in the parade through Beijing.
So, Jonathan, how will the situation in Hong Kong be factoring into China's plans for this occasion?
Well, I think that the great apprehension, the great fear of the leadership in Beijing must be that there will be, you know, a considerable unrest breaking out specifically in Hong Kong, targeted at the 70th anniversary during the course of Tuesday. We saw violence over the weekend in Hong Kong, and I think the fear would be that not only will there be more of this, but it may be aimed more specifically at symbols in Hong Kong of the central government, such as its offices there, the People's Liberation Army, and so on. So Hong Kong, the unrest in Hong Kong has come along for the Chinese leadership at a rather embarrassing time.
And given China's often extreme efforts to maintain a public image of order and obedience, Jonathan, how important is it that this anniversary is carried out in a way that China will deem successfully?
Absolutely. The importance of this anniversary going through successfully from the leadership's point of view in Beijing, I think, is hard to overstate, not just for the Chinese state and the Communist Party, but also for Xi Jinping, the leader himself, who has identified himself so closely with the party, with the nation. And this is his party, in a sense, as well as that of the Communist Party and of the People's Republic of China. So it is essential, and you can see that it goes through smoothly, and you can see from the intensity of the preparations that no stone has been left unturned to try to ensure that that is so.
Jonathan Fenby, thank you for joining us. U.S. rail operator Amtrak is scaling down its onboard dining options this week. The traditional made-to-order meals will be replaced by pre-packaged food on many long-distance journeys, including services from New York to Chicago and Florida. Monocle's editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, says it's a missed opportunity.
We've been championing everything from overnight rail for a long time, saying that this really has to be coming back because on one side, an era when companies want to tighten belts, etc., you know, how clever to put your executive on an overnight train and, you know, really sort of, you know, bundle in the cost of a train and a hotel, you know, in one swoop, which is great. And then, of course, there's a whole environmental discussion, not just in Europe, but everywhere, about just the advantages of rail in general. As we know right now, there's obviously a lot of discussion, you know, up and down Europe as to, you know, if the journey is under 3 hours by train, you know, companies should probably be instituting the fact that, you know, unless it's a real emergency, you shouldn't be flying, you should be going by rail. And here we have the story out of the United States, of course, that Amtrak is is almost going the opposite direction when they should be investing more and really taking a completely different tack about just the joys of rail travel. They're actually, in a way, almost behaving more like an airline. If Amtrak was running something like Japan's Shinkansen, and many people will know that you don't have dining cars on the Shinkansen because they are so incredibly fast. They have a seat-side service, but that is not Amtrak. You know, Amtrak, you know, has a lot of trains which are really marketed, you know, partly for tourists. Others, of course, you know, they are part of the commuter shuttle sort of, you know, rail link, where there have traditionally been a dining, you know, there have been dining cars which are in great places for senators and lobbyists and all kinds of people to meet. And so it just seems like you're taking this, you know, something which, yeah, worked really well for an Atlanta-based airline, which is global, and works in of course, you know, very small or thin aluminium tubes. It doesn't work quite in the same way when you have the luxury, the time of the countryside going by, or the cityscape of being on rail. Well, there is definitely a romance about rail travel, whether it is that which is conjured up by Graham Greene, any number of Cold War novels. You've got, you know, that side of, you know, getting on the train in a Budapest or Vienna, venturing east, venturing west. But I think the same, you know, at the same time, we were talking about the United States and a nation which was, you know, on so many levels built on the rail. So it just feels very out of step. It's almost like this was something which was sort of baked, you know, 18 months ago, and they've decided to release this, you know, at a time when, of course, climate is so front and center in the debate, and everyone is talking about rail and what the possibilities are. I have to say, in Switzerland, the very exciting thing is we have the new train, which is going to be going very fast to Milan now, or reasonably fast, complete, just launched with a dining car.
Sebastian Kurz emerged the winner of Austria's election at the weekend, but he's now faced with a tough choice. The former chancellor could form government with his former coalition partner, the far-right Freedom Party. But that party's role in sparking the Russian influence-peddling scandal that brought down the previous coalition government could make things difficult. The alternative, however, striking a deal with the left-wing Greens Party, would be quite a political shift. Tessa Shishkovitz is UK correspondent for Profil magazine.
I think everyone was surprised because the opinion polls before the elections showed better result for prognosis for the far right. What happened, I think, in the last weeks before the elections was that the far right Freedom Party got involved. There were some revelations about expense scandals around the leadership, former head of the party, Heinz-Christian Strache, and that further dampened their results. So a combination of the Ibiza video scandal from May with these new revelations just kicked them off the chances to return to government as the logical partner for Sebastian Kurz. He is definitely the successful populist. He managed to gain votes, although his previous coalition failed completely in renewing Austria's sort of contract with the people and with the future. So they just had to resign after 18 months. And still he comes out as the one who is the stable prime minister that people trust again to form another government. So that's the first thing. So the second thing is that the zeitgeist has changed a little bit in the last 2 years. So the last elections were fought on a tough immigration stance after the refugee crisis resulted in, you know, strong anxieties in the population. This time, we are sort of in the middle of a Fridays for Future frenzy. People are thinking about the climate catastrophe more than about the consequences of immigration. Sebastian Kurz tried to push the immigration topic in all conversations and all interviews during the election campaign. But in fact, the results and the success of the Green Party shows that the younger voters want something else than the constant immigration debate. So they turn to the Green Party. And a lot of people in the middle of the society also thought that they wanted some kind of more open-minded and more progressive stance on questions like immigration, European Union, and climate. And those people voted either Green or for the small Liberal Party, which was also quite successful.
And finally today, Monocle's editorial team looks at the state of art fairs as Frieze Week sets London's art scene aflutter.
Much has been written about how the increasing business of the art calendar means the art fair giants like Basel and Fries are giving ground to smaller boutique fairs. While it's true that events such as Art Monte Carlo and Art Genève have found their footing with collectors because of their manageable size, the established players have not thrown in the towel, nor stopped setting the agenda. And in London, this week is clearly Fries Week. In order to remain relevant, established fairs must constantly evolve, which is often done by means of new sections and themed shows. Fries has always been skilled at this, often anticipating trends that later sweep through museum and galleries programming. This year, it's debuting a section called Woven, dedicated to textile works of art. Interestingly, to move the discussion away from the assumption that such works are often a feminist statement, curator Cosmin Costinas from Hong Kong's Parasite has set out to use them as part of a discussion on post-colonialism. And if we do want to talk about size, Fries will suit you just fine. It's big enough to feel like an international draw and give you bang for your buck if you're a curious visitor, yet small enough to be achievable in one or two afternoons. Those who bemoan its overwhelming nature clearly have never been to a construction material or bathroom fittings fair in a sprawling German Messe. And let's not forget the catering. A day of arts and culture is never complete without a tasty bite to eat. See you at the fair.
That's all in today's program. Read more about the stories you've heard today by signing up to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Wednesday.